Across the UK on Freeview Channel 730 and on smart devices. This is RNIB Connect Radio.
I'm Ravi Sagu and a very warm welcome to Blind Notes on RNIB Connect Radio. In this conversation series, I'll be speaking to different musicians each week, exploring their portfolio of work, their own musical loves, inspirations, and what drives them to perform the music they make. I myself have experience of slightly impaired vision as I suffer from keratoconus, and I'm keen to explore how our guests have overcome their visual disabilities to make their own music and achieve their musical goals. Our guest today hails from Bridgend in Wales and is best known for her work as a soprano across recital, concert and oratorio work as a soloist. As well as having a busy performing schedule, she's a talented pianist and is also a member of an RNIB task group which aims to improve the accessibility of Braille music. Join me for an hour of conversation and song with Welsh soprano Anne Wilkins. A very warm welcome to Blind Notes, Anne. Great to have you with us today. And tell me more about your visual disability.
Well, it means that I have no vision at all, and that's caused by retinopathy of prematurity. So when I was born, I was given oxygen, which damaged the back of my eyes. And my parents actually found out that I couldn't see when I was about 8 or 9 months old, because I wasn't focusing properly, and that's how they found out. And basically at that time they were told just basically get on with it, which they very successfully did. It's as simple as that, really. When I applied for my disability living allowance, when it was being adjusted several years ago, I spoke to a consultant because I had to prove that I did have a visual impairment. And he was very interested in how much I knew about my eye condition. But he did say that between about 1941 and the mid-50s, there was an epidemic of this sort of eye condition where a lot of children had that, and a number of people I was at school with had the same thing.
And when did music first begin to play an important part in your life? Was there music being played at home?
Yes, it was always played at home, mainly classical and brass bands, because my grandfather had conducted a brass band in Wales. Unfortunately, I never heard them, and he sadly died when I was about 18 months old, so I don't remember him at all. But, you know, there was always music in the house of all sorts, really, classical and other music as well. The piano, which I still use, was there because it had been in the family before I came along. And so there was always music at home.
So very much runs in the family, music. But some of your musical experiences at school in the beginning weren't exactly encouraging.
No, they weren't. Because I'd always enjoyed just trying to play the piano and pick up tunes. And I'm not one of these blind people who has perfect pitch and can sit down and play anything. I've got to sit there and work it all out. But I'd always, you know, tried to play in my own way before I went to school. And when I went to school, my parents asked if I could have piano lessons. And I was then about five. And they were told no, I had to wait until I was eight. And so that was what happened.
So without that encouragement at school, you know, how did music take over and how did you sort of ignite your own passion then? Because that must be a bit sort of disheartening, you know, school not saying, yeah, we can do this. You have to wait a few years. How did you just think, right, no, I'm going to do this anyway?
Well, it took a while because my experience of school wasn't entirely a happy one. So I think until the piano lessons started, and even after they'd started, I was sort of resigning myself to the fact that I had to be in a special school. I didn't like it. And all sorts of things. There was a lot of unhappiness and emotional difficulties for not just myself, but my family as well. So all that had to be dealt with. So that sort of took over, really. And then I didn't really start to enjoy music properly again until when I was about 13 and I tried my grade one piano exam. And then the interest started in piano. And then I went on to what's now the Royal National College for the Blind, which was then in Shrewsbury. And there I did a grade four piano and got distinction for that. And then grade five piano. And then you can't go on to higher grades until you've passed the theory. And I failed the theory exam. And by then I'd been sort of quite rightly by my family and various other people guided towards a secretarial course, which I was doing. But I remember saying to someone, I'm not going to do anything with music anymore. And for about 2 years, and well, maybe slightly longer, I didn't. So I got all my secretarial qualifications, left, started applying for jobs and got a job with South Wales Police. And about a year and a half into my job, that all my attitude to music all changed because I met some family friends who were singers in their profession, and they heard me sing something at a very informal musical evening at someone's home in West Wales, and they suggested that I had singing lessons. And then I applied to the what's now the Royal Welsh College of Music and Drama to be a part-time student, which meant one lesson a week for an hour, and passed the exam, which I'd failed years before, music theory, and got all the other grades in music theory and piano as well. So I was really pleased with all that, and I was doing all this while I was working full-time as well.
And I love your passion. I love how your early influences didn't put you off in later life, in adult life. Mm-hmm. So I'm really encouraging of that. And, you know, I take a lot from that. So, you know, hats off to you. Well done for that. Can I ask then, you've been the soloist in a number of performances. Is there one piece of music that you've performed that matches your own voice, you know, the best?
Oh, I think the one piece of music that I really loved performing, you know, I've done concert recital and oratorio work, and oratorio is particularly lovely. You know, you get Handel's Messiah at Christmas time, and there are so many others. I've done the Brahms German Requiem, Bach B minor Mass, but I think the one that really stands out for me is Mendelssohn's Elijah, and I sang that in a local church with a local choral society, and I think there were people there who didn't think I could do it. That performance, I think, stood out for me because I had lived and breathed it for about the 3 or 4 months before, and I'd bought the CD of Bryn Terfel and Renee Fleming performing it, and I think my neighbours got to know it just as well because I used to learn. I was learning it by turning it up on my CD player in the kitchen, and I think they got to know it as well. But I can listen to it now, and I can go through that performance and think what I was, you know, remember what I was thinking at different parts of it, and it was just, I loved it every second of it. That I think for me is one of the highlights of what I've done.
And let's hear a little something from that piece right now on the show.
Yeah. RNIB Talking Books provides more than 1 million audiobooks every year to people with sight loss and is now completely free for all blind and partially sighted people in the UK. The RNIB Library is the largest of its kind in Europe and offers a wide range of fiction and non-fiction titles, which readers can access on CD, on USB, or as a digital download. The RNIB Library also caters for adults and children in Braille so that you can listen how you choose, whether at home or on the go. To find out more about the RNIB Library or to sign up for your free membership, call the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999 or visit www.rnib.org.uk/library.
You're listening to Blind Notes with Ravi Sagu on RNIB Connect Radio. There's lots more content online at the website. Simply head along to rnibconnect.org.uk. You can contact us as well at radio@rnib.org.uk. And of course, follow us on Twitter as well. The handle, as always, is @rnibradio. I'm in conversation with Anne Wilkins. Anne, you went on to have a working career for South Wales Police, which you've touched upon.
Mm-hmm.
You were awarded the British Empire Medal in 1991. You made the New Year's Honours list.
You have I'm done your research, haven't you?
I was just about to say, I'm very, very jealous. I'm a middle child. The only list I make is the naughty list, right? At Christmas. But in 2011, you took early retirement to devote more time to your career in music, a really bold move, you know, especially because you'd left music behind, you know, at certain points in your life. Tell me more about this journey.
Yeah, well, once I started to sing and to have lessons and also to compete in the Welsh Eisteddfodau, we call them, all of that really came together. And my piano and theory, especially in the last few years, I've brought those up to the same level as my singing. And I wanted to prove that even though I didn't go to music college full time, I was aiming to be equally as good as the next really good professional musician. And I thought the only way I can do this is to work as hard as I can to get the qualifications I want and really show my passion for music through the work that I do.
And what did you study then?
Well, I studied music theory, singing and piano, and I then started to work with my singing teacher who I still go to see when I'm, you know, when I've got something coming up to work for. And she really believed in me. We went up to the Royal College of Music together and she accompanied me for my exam. And it was, I thought, well, I've actually got here, even though I've worked outside my job and just, you know, worked in my own time.
And Anne, what different learning techniques have you adopted for playing and reading music with your visual impairment?
I use Braille music because I'm a passionate Braille music user and I think it brings any Braille user on an equal level with sighted musicians. I mean, I could read a music score if I was with any other musicians, and it would, the only difference would be it would be a Braille music score, but I could convert it in my head to, you know, print music because I've taught myself enough to be able to do that. And I also teach sighted children as well. So I could do that. And I do use audio learning as well when it's necessary, say if something isn't in Braille, or if I need to learn something very quickly and I can't get a Braille score in time, you know, that sort of thing. And I work with Sian Davis, who's a really great accompanist, and she's a very successful accompanist and repetitor in Wales, works with opera singers, choirs, soloists, and also with Jeanette Masocchi, my singing teacher.
And how do you cope singing in foreign languages? Because I believe Braille has differences between languages as well.
It does, yes. I'm lucky that Jeanette is able to coach in other languages, in German, French, Italian, and some Spanish as well, I believe. So she helps with any languages or pronunciations that I'm not sure of. And there's a lot available online as well. And so I get round it like that.
Well, my pronunciations are a bit comme ci, comme ça, and that's just me speaking in French. And we're going to hear a little something from your work. Tell me more about this rendition from one of your favourites, the Countess aria.
Oh, the Marriage of Figaro, yes. Well, the Countess in this aria is longing to be sort of loved by the Count again. And she's going through all the emotions of anger and bitterness and happiness and longing for things to be as they were with the Count. I think that's a shorter summary as I can give, really.
This is Anne Wilkins from Mozart's Marriage of Figaro, Dove Sono.
Per come il conte accolse la proposta, alquanto ardito il progetto mi par. Ad uno sposo se vivace e geloso, ma che mal c'è? Cangiando i miei vestiti con quelli di Susanna e suoi con a favore della notte, o cielo, a quale mio stato fatale io son ridotta da un consorte crude, che dopo avermi con un misto inaudito di fedeltà, di gelosia, di sdegno,
you
And you went on to study in Cardiff at the Royal Welsh College of Music and Drama. Tell me more of your experience at the college. What did you study in and specialise in?
I mainly just studied singing there. The rest of my studies were done at home on my own. Firstly, with a wonderful person who's still a friend after many years, Catherine Phipps, who taught music at the Bridgend School for the Blind. And she got me through the grade 5 music theory exam. And then I did a sort of correspondence course because I couldn't find anyone else to take me further because Catherine's commitments didn't allow her to carry on teaching me, although she would have liked to have done. I did a sort of a correspondence course with Susan Yates, who's a blind person and lives in Liverpool. And she taught me for grade 6, 7 and 8 music theory and helped me with braille music and also piano lessons on tape, which took a long time and it was, you know, quite a slow process, but we got there from grade 6 to grade 8 piano. So I do owe Sue a lot when it comes to that.
And your learning continues with musical director Jeanette Masoke, who founded the St Willow's Symphonia and was the orchestra's first conductor. What's it like learning from her and working with her?
She's a real inspiration, particularly to me, but to many musicians in Wales and beyond. She's done so much for music. It's just a wonderful experience to work with her, and I owe her so much. And I think when I first went to her, life wasn't in a great place for me, and she really restored my confidence and has continued to encourage me, not just in music, but in other things as well. And you know, just said, well, get on with it and go and do it and go and travel and do all sorts of things. And I do, not just because she says things, but because, you know, I want to do these things. And, you know, that support and encouragement is always there. And I think it's something very special.
How challenging have you found the experience of working with such a big ensemble and fitting your visual disability within practice and performance?
I haven't found it that challenging at all, because usually we average about 30 players for a concert, sometimes 35. Depends on what the programme is. And I know them all. Some are professionals, some are students, some are amateurs, you know, good amateurs, but they all mix in together. The leader of the orchestra is Dr. Christoph Maedler, who is a consultant cardiologist in the Royal Gwent Hospital in Newport. And they are all really great people to work with. And the conductor of the orchestra is Tiani Liu, who is the first female conductor in residence with Welsh National Opera, and she's also just been appointed a resident conductor of one of the Norwegian orchestras as well.
And you're not only a learned student of music, but you also teach singing, piano, braille music, and in fact a member of a RNIB task group which works to improve the accessibility of braille music. Tell me more about the work that you've done with the task group and how braille music has developed.
The task group is part of the music subject area for the Association of UK Accessible Formats. So the abbreviation for them is the UKAAF. Roger Furman, who may be known to some musicians, is the chair of the organisation, and they deal with not just braille music, but all sorts of other areas where people might not find music very accessible to read. So for example, somebody who is dyslexic could be helped by that group as well. Braille music itself was developed, it's a completely different system from staff notation, and it was developed, as I discovered quite recently, by Louis Braille, who invented Braille. But I don't think it's generally known that he also invented Braille music. You have to know Braille very well to be able to read Braille music. It's really developed from the Braille system, which is a little bit more complicated to explain, but it's you use all the braille cells and signs and just turn them in your head to music notes. It can be quite complicated, but once you get into it, it really isn't. I'm not sure if that's a really good explanation, but that's the best I can do, really, to make it as simple as possible.
Now, and one of your goals is to try and put visually impaired musicians on a level pegging with sighted musicians.
Yeah.
How can you achieve this?
This is a difficult one. I think it's a barrier that visually impaired musicians have to break down. You have to be realistic and know that there are certain aspects of music which you're probably not going to be able to do as successfully. But, you know, as long as you know what you can do within the music world and what you can do successfully. And I think it's just a question of getting your name out there, getting your work out there, like the examples that you're playing today. And hopefully people will take notice. And it's like everything else. People don't know what you can do unless they see you doing it. That's the important thing, I think.
And we're going to hear some more of your work. This time we're heading off to Handel's Semele. Perhaps you could lead us into this one.
Yeah, this is where the main character in the opera, she's really loves one of the gods, and she's been taken up into his idea of heaven, and she's ecstatically happy because that's where she is and that's where she wants to be. And that's how the act ends, with Semele being taken up to the gods. And so she's very happy to be with the particular god that she's in love with.
This is Anne Wilkins with Endless Pleasure.
Endless love, Semele joys above. Endless love, Semele joys.
You're listening to Blind Notes with myself, Ravi Sagi, on RNIB Connect Radio. I'm in conversation today with Anne Wilkins. And singing, it's not just about voice, it's about conveying emotion, sometimes inhibiting a character, using your whole body.
Yeah.
So first, how did you take to that kind of performance? And also, how do you actually teach it to your students as well?
Well, sometimes I try and teach them as much as I can personally, but occasionally when it comes to the visual aspect of things, I do bring in Sian, my accompanist, who is also used to working with opera singers, and she can look at them visually and tell me what they're either doing or not doing. And that's how we work. It's important that they get that visual aspect of things for their exams, because in exams, presentation is a really important part of their performance as well. But the visual aspect of performing, it's something that Jeanette Masoki and I have worked on in great detail, and we've got a good understanding when I perform anything. She sometimes has to remind me of things that I'm not doing, or maybe things I am doing that I shouldn't be. But we've just always had a good understanding of, you know, how to get that across properly, and it just works well.
And at times the issues with blind musicians is that obviously you don't maybe sometimes have eye contact with your audience.
No.
So how do you connect with your audience when, you know, you're on stage and other ways? How does that work for you?
It's something that we did think quite a lot about, Jeanette and I, in lessons. And she came up with the idea of wearing glasses, slightly tinted glasses, and it works. Well, I remember when I first started singing, and I was a soloist in a local choir for a little while, and I didn't do anything like wearing glasses, and people would get very sympathetic, and, you know, the tissues would come out, and I thought, well, I don't want that. So we tried to avoid the sympathetic aspect of a visually impaired person singing, and it seems to work. You know, I've won the Blue Ribbon at the National Eisteddfod of Wales, which is a prestigious competition. And I'm sure that, I know it sounds a bit silly in a way, I'm sure that if I hadn't done something about my appearance like that, I wouldn't even have been considered for a competition like that. So it has helped. I know the first time I ever wore the glasses, I was on a plane going to Prague on a holiday, and someone just started chatting to me, and I don't think they would have spoken, just started a conversation with me, if I hadn't looked slightly differently, the fact that they couldn't tell whether I had any sight at all, which was quite nice. I've actually been called partially sighted as well, which was, I enjoyed that moment quite a lot.
I mean, ultimately, you want to be celebrated for your talent and your music and who you are.
Yes,
always.
Exactly. Yes, yes, yeah, of course. And I think that's just making that small adjustment is something that now happens, which didn't happen before that.
And you're such a busy person. You run music workshops as well for the blind and partially sighted people in Bridge End in conjunction with RNIB in Wales.
Yeah.
Now, it's open to everyone celebrating creativity and music, but you're particularly encouraging of older folk to attend as well. What's the uptake been like? Tell me more about the project.
Yes, it happened in 2019. Yes, we were quite pleased with the Bridge End uptake for the first workshop that I did. And there was also one in West Wales, which was quite well attended. That was towards the end of that year. But then, of course, we had COVID, so everything stopped. But I think, you know, when things do open up again, there might be a possibility of some more. I hadn't done anything like that before these particular workshops. And the general impression was that we had about 30, I think, at the first one. I was quite surprised at how well attended they were, and I think people enjoyed them. We actually, a very small group from the Bridge End workshop, performed at the Bridgeviz annual Christmas concert in 2019, which the performance was quite good.
What's that one bit of advice you'd maybe give to someone who's toying with coming along, that's maybe slightly apprehensive, maybe doesn't, you know, have that confidence cultivated inside? What's that one bit of advice that you'd give them, you know, given your music career and what you've been through and what you've experienced?
I just say come along and give it a go. And if you don't like it, that's fine. But, you know, you might find that you really enjoy it. There were people at the first workshop that I ran who said that they didn't think it would be as good as it was, and how much they enjoyed it, and, you know, they caught the bus home and they felt differently from when they'd arrived at the workshop. So they felt happier and as if they were walking on air, I suppose, one person said. So I was quite pleased with that and surprised.
And that's a tune in itself as well, Anne.
Yes. Yeah.
How do you enjoy the teaching side of things? Or is performing where your passion lies? Or what do you get from, you know, your teaching work?
Well, teaching, I think it's nice to be able to pass on what I've learned to other people. Performing is really where my passion lies and always will. But teaching is interesting as well. And you get some, especially at the moment with teaching online, you get some very funny experiences. I was teaching someone last week and they were singing in one key and I was playing in the others, which was, it was quite fun actually. But yes, I enjoy passing on what I've learned and trying to pass it on as well as I can to other people.
Time for some more music on the show. And again, this is from yourself. A lullaby written by Aaron Copland. Again, could you perhaps lead us into this?
Yes, this is The Little Horses. Yes, it's a very descriptive song written by the American composer Aaron Copland. And I think it probably would have been 19th century, that sort of time, you know, people in the cotton fields and singing to their children. So that's what I like to think of it as, being that sort of song. But it's one that I really enjoyed performing.
The voice of Anne Wilkins from Handel's Semele with Endless Pleasure. You're listening to Blind Notes with Ravi Sagu on RNIB Connect Radio. There's lots more content online at the website. Simply head along to rnibconnect.org.uk. You can contact us as well at radio@rnib.org.uk. And of course, follow us on Twitter as well. The handle, as always, is @RNIBRadio. I'm in conversation today with Welsh soprano Anne Wilkins. Anne, some lovely, lovely stuff that you've put together and recorded. Loving hearing your voice today. Can you tell me more about your work on the concert platform?
Yes. Well, I've always enjoyed concerts, particularly since I started singing. And when I think back to some of the things I did when I first started singing lessons, because I didn't really understand technique properly. I mean, some of the things I did must have sounded terrible. I've probably got some tapes of old recordings somewhere, which I just would not make anyone suffer those at all. But I just think it's important to be able to communicate with your audience, and you can do that in concerts and recitals. I think the saying about you can't give pleasure to others without getting some yourself is very true. It's always nice when somebody comes up and, you know, at the end of a concert and says, oh, well, I really enjoyed, you know, a particular song, or that reminds me of something from years ago. Or, you know, the one thing I don't like is when people say, oh, you've got a beautiful voice. And I think, well, yeah, but it's not all about somebody's voice. And what they don't always realise is you've had to work very, very hard to get to that point. It's not something that I've naturally got. It's just something I've really had to work hard for.
And how much confidence have you gained from performing over the years?
Oh, loads of confidence. Loads of confidence. People don't believe me when I say that when I started singing, I was a very, very shy, quiet, introvert person. In fact, when it came to my very first singing lessons with one of the family friends I mentioned earlier, I remember sitting on the stairs listening to my father on the phone asking our friend if she would teach me. I wouldn't ask myself, I was too shy. I've really gained so much confidence, and people now don't believe that I used to be like that, but I was.
And in your career, it's taken you across the world, including a trip to Hong Kong. I'm rather jealous.
Yeah.
you conducted a workshop in Braille music.
I did.
And a vocal masterclass with 6 visually impaired students.
Yes.
How did this come about? I'm jealous. I really am.
Well, Sally Zimmerman, who was then music advisor for the RNIB, she has since retired, but she put me in contact with some people from the Hong Kong Blind Union, Mr. and Mrs. Wong, who now live in Manchester. They had been left some money, I believe, to start a music advisory service like the one we have in the UK for blind musicians in Hong Kong. But they wanted to raise more funds to keep this going and to really make sure that blind musicians there had the right training, had the support to go to school and college and university, learn Braille music. So they want to get their teachers trained as well. And a concert should have taken place in the City Hall in Hong Kong. So this is what I was offered. The email dropped into my inbox the day before I was due to fly off to New Zealand to visit friends for Christmas. And that was in 2018. And I thought, I can't deal with this until I get back. So that's what happened. I had 3 weeks in New Zealand and then I came back. And a little while later, remembered about this email and thought, well, I better deal with this. So I gave it a lot of thought. I found out more about what the people in Hong Kong wanted. The result of that was that I went to Hong Kong in November 2019, hopefully to do the concert. But on the day of the concert, it was cancelled because of the protests in Hong Kong. So I just did the Braille music workshop and the vocal workshop.
And I'm very, very jealous of your trips over to Hong Kong. If you ever need someone to carry your suitcases, I'm here, I'm willing.
Right? Yeah, yeah, okay.
if you need any backing vocals, don't call upon me. I'm horrendous. We're going to go to some music just now. We're going to play a little bit of you singing on your doorstep over the rainbow. That was the incredible voice of Anne Wilkins with Over the Rainbow. Now, Anne, lockdown, it's proved a rather incredibly challenging time for everyone. Have you kept up with music? Because you swapped the stage for your doorstep, didn't you?
I did, yes, yeah. Well, this was thanks to my wonderful friend and neighbour, Alan Hawke, who is a West End actor. He appeared in several of the big West End shows, and we'll be doing some more before the end of this year, I believe. But he was home in the first lockdown with his family, and we were clapping for the neighbours one Thursday evening, and at the end of the clapping, he came over and said, "How do you fancy singing for the neighbours? Because they don't really know what you do." And I thought, yeah, why not? Okay, so we sang together, and I sang, and then Sean, my accompanist, came over, and a few weeks later we put the keyboard on the drive, and her dog was with us as well, and we sang, and Alan posted these videos on Facebook, and they just went viral. We had something like 62,000 views. I was really surprised, and I had friend requests on social media from people I'd never heard of. Some I accepted, some I didn't. I really did sort of vet them carefully. But one or two things have come as a result. I really enjoyed the experience. The Wales Online newspaper got hold of what we had done as well and interviewed both of us, and the neighbours became celebrities for half a day. It was quite good. Yeah, we both enjoyed it, yes.
That's it's quite a title to have during lockdown, Noisy Neighbours.
Yes.
What were the songs that you performed?
I sang Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and Nightingale sang in Berkeley Square. Alan and I did a duet together. And, the Ivan Novello Waltz of My Heart, which I've sung again recently. And yes, and I think a couple of other things as well, which I wasn't so happy with, but I think they enjoyed them all.
Now, you've mentioned it there, the original video of you and Alan singing All I Ask of You during the lockdown. It's amassed over sort of 62,000 views, over 1,000 shares on Facebook alone. And you finally managed to record the song in a studio quality setting,
yes,
which we're about to hear. What was it like working with Alan in this environment?
Oh, he's just fabulous to work with anyway. And I think it's because I've known him all his life. His parents moved in when he was about 3 weeks old. He's grown up living, you know, across the road from me and his sister as well. And it's just lovely working with him. He's just got a lovely way of bringing out the best in singers and musicians. And I think because it's something he does as his career, he's super confident and really lovely guy to work with.
So from the doorstep to the internet to the studio, this is Anne Wilkins and Alan Hawke with All I Ask of You.
Nothing can harm you. My words will warm and calm you. Let me be your freedom. Let daylight dry your tears. I'm here with you, beside you, to guard you and to guide you. Love, one lifetime.
That was the delightful voice with Anne Wilkins and Alan Hawke with All I Ask of You. It's amazing what singing on the doorstep can do. It can just go viral and some. Well done again, Anne. I'm blown away by that studio recording. I really am. And you're also no stranger to the other side of the microphone, having presented your own Christmas show on RNIB Connect Radio. Tell me more about that. Any plans to perhaps do another one?
I'd love to. In fact, just before the first lockdown, Lynn Morgan and I had been discussing, we had actually started to make a list of music that I would use for my next one. And I believe the manager of RNIB Connect Radio in Scotland had been very impressed. In fact, she did call me and said how impressed she was with what I had done. So I would very, very much like to do another programme, you know, when I can.
And what projects are you working on at the moment? Any more plans to release music?
Alan and I have been talking about a sort of anniversary concert of Singing on the Doorstep. So who knows what will happen. And there have been a couple of other things which are probably in the pipeline. Did some filming last week, which I can't really talk about at the moment. But yeah, quite a few interesting things in the pipeline, I think, at the moment.
As they say, watch this space.
Watch this space, yes.
And it's been so lovely to have you with us today. Honestly, a really fascinating journey into your life in music and beyond. Many, many thanks for joining us on Blind Notes.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Anne Wilkins, thank you.
From RNIB, the UK's leading sight loss charity. This is RNIB Connect Radio.
You've been listening to Blind Notes with me, Ravi Sagu, which is a Demos production supported by the Audio Content Fund for RNIB Connect Radio.
Shall we gather by the river where bright angels' feet have trod? With its crystal tide forever, as it flows by the throne of God. The beautiful, the beautiful.